for Lyman Ag Supply and the Family Vision Center. This is Bob Bevensey along with Grant Jolly, the conservation officer for Cass and Adair Counties, on this morning's Conservation Report. Good morning, Grant.
Good morning, Bob.
Hey, we got kind of through a little bit of summer and now into some cooler weather, and now we got wet weather and whatever you want you can get in Iowa almost all on the same day.
That's right. Hey, I could get used to this kind of weather for almost being the 4th of July and temperatures in the 80s and 70s, I think we ought to take that.
Yeah, you bet we should. These nights, so far the mosquitoes haven't been too bad, I don't think. I know the flies hanging around my horses haven't been all that bad, so it's not too bad of a time of year to be sitting around a pond or a lake and doing a little fishing.
It's not too bad, no. I've talked to a few folks, though, who've been encountering some ticks here recently, and of course they've been out for months, but, you know, just... It doesn't matter where you go anymore. You got to make sure you've got bug repellent and sunscreen on before you get out there and do any outdoor recreating. So that's important stuff, especially if you have kids.
I'm always amazed at a wood tick, as tiny as they are, but you can feel one of them things crawling on you, and it gets your attention even if you're not even thinking tick. Oh, what's that?
And after you feel one, you feel like you feel 100 more then for the rest of the day.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about guys that are not necessarily fishing the lakes and ponds, but they're fishing, the Anishinaabemowin has been pretty productive on catfish.
Yeah, I've been getting a few reports of people catching some quality, I'm talking 40, 50 pound flathead catfish out there on the Nish. And, you know, some of the questions that sometimes arise with that is, you know, how can I do it? What are some things I need to be aware of before I go out there? And, you know, one of the more popular ways of catching catfish is using trot lines. And we see, they kind of have different terminology up here in Iowa from what I was used to. We called them bank poles in different parts of the country, but up here they're referred to as ditty poles a lot of times. Uh-huh. So those are things that we see are real popular this time of the year, especially when people get out and you know, catfish are starting to spawn. So this is the time of the year when they're very active and can be caught on pole and line or trot lines. So here in Iowa, we consider trot lines a number of things. They can be called tagged lines, throw lines, bank lines, ditty poles, and various other names. So that's one of the more popular things that we see in small rivers and streams for flathead catfish. And, of course, when you've got a fishing license to use these, you cannot have out more than 5 trot lines. These trot lines cannot have more than 15 hooks total between the 5 of them. So one of the things that sometimes is kind of forgotten or a little bit lax on is that you have to remember that each line that you have out has to be plainly labeled with the owner's name and address. Mm-hmm. So that's an important thing to remember. And also that they have to be checked once, at least once every 24 hours. So some of the complaints that we sometimes get is, you know, people do a sloppy job. They put their lines out and weekend's over and then they forget about them. Well, unfortunately, we get complaints sometimes where you might see herons or other birds wrapped up in these lines or caught on the hooks. So if they're not being fished, they got to be out of the water. It's just, you know, pretty simple stuff, but they can be really effective for flathead catfish. So mm-hmm. That's one of the things that we're starting to see this time of the year, which it's kind of neat to talk about flatheads and how big they can get and the different habitats that they use, as opposed to just talking about, we talk a lot about bluegill and bass and crappie. So flatheads are a really unique fish. They're pretty interesting, can live for a very long time, and absolutely one of my favorite fish to eat. They're incredible on the table. So just some things to maybe think about before you head out and set those lines.
Let's talk a little bit more about those trot lines. You said 15 hooks. You can have up to 5 hooks on a line.
Yeah, so you can have 5 ditty lines or ditty poles out for a total of 15 mm-hmm. hooks total between those 5. So it's somewhat confusing, but if you go to our fishing regulations book, it's right there in the very beginning under the different methods that we allow. But yeah, it's 5 ditty poles. And then that's per licensed angler, too, so obviously, so not just per boat, so per angler can use those.
So if I want to go out and put one out, I can put one one, if I'm going to put one line out, mm-hmm. how many hooks can I have on it?
You can have up to five on that one, okay, I believe. All right. Yep. Yeah. So,
Limits on, can you go across the channel or?
Yeah, that's a great question. For a trot line, you can't actually set it across the entire width of the stream or river. So that's a good question, and that's also covered here in the regulations as well. And also, they have to be tied off above the bank. So that's one thing that we sometimes see is they have to be tied above the water line. It can't be tied, you know, under the water, under root wad or the base of a tree under the water. They have to be visible, you know, above water. So, mm-hmm. yeah, those are good questions. And we don't have to worry about this too much here, but, you know, you can't use trot lines in stocked lakes or within 300 feet of dams or spillways, you know, like on the Mississippi or other big rivers. Sure. So those are some things to keep in mind also if you're going to be fishing somewhere other than the niche. But, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what do you use for a line for a 40-pound catfish, well, Baylor twine.
That would come in handy at times, but you know, I heard a story the other day of a guy catching one with, you know, like 8-pound line on rod and reel. So it takes a little bit longer, but you know, typically you see guys using with these ditty poles. They'll use real heavy, you know, 100-pound fishing line or more, and bait them with a real big hook. And a lot of people find that one of the best baits is green sunfish, or they call them greenies sometimes. They stay alive for a real long time. You put a bluegill on there, sometimes they die before they're, you know, the pole's in the water. But these green sunfish can stay alive for a long time, and they're excellent bait for flatheads.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think the old Indian lore is that catfish moused off to a buffalo, and the buffalo stomped on him and created the flathead catfish. Isn't that the old story?
Yeah, I've heard that before.
Yeah. Let's talk about, we got these 40 or 50-pound fish, and the guy's thinking, hey, I got one of them. I wonder if it's a state record. How does he go about finding out, and what does he need to do?
Good question, and I've gotten some calls about that here recently, and I've put a couple of articles out in the newspapers here in Cass and Dare counties. So yeah, if you know, one of the best pieces of literature that you can pick up as an angler is our fishing regulations that we publish each year. And if you flip the thing over on the very back page, it's got a lot of our all-time fishing records listed there by species. And so if you've caught a really big fish and you think it may be a state record, the first thing that you need to do is try to get it weighed. And you want to try to do that while it's still alive. We don't accept weights on frozen fish, so you want to try to get it while it's still alive. And I would simply, if I thought I had a state record bass, let's use, I would find myself a scale, and if it was more than the weight of 10 pounds 12 ounces, which is the current Iowa state record, I would then take it to a certified scale. You know, you can see them in your local grocery stores a lot of times, or butcher shops, meat markets, all have those things. Mm-hmm. And then you can get a certified or a very accurate measurement of it then. The thing to keep in mind, and this is where sometimes people get a little bit confused, is, for instance, I had a person call me the other day. They had caught a fish that was 24 inches in length, which was a half inch longer than the state record, and they thought that in of itself was good enough to get them the record. However, they're about 4 pounds shy of the actual weight record. So they go by weight. So weight is the determining factor. And then the length of the fish is obviously recorded on these potential record fish as well. So those are some things to keep in mind. And when you, if you go through those processes and you have one that's, you know, more than an ounce larger than the current record, you can give myself a call or your local conservation officer. If it's during the week, a lot of times we can get a hold of a fisheries biologist at the office here in Lewis or wherever you're at, and they can get that thing certified. You want to take, obviously, pictures of it, because I've had some people call on a few different occasions and say, well, I think I caught a new state record, and this is what the fish is. And before we go through too many motions, I say, why don't you send me a picture of it on my cell phone? And when I get the picture, sometimes I have to burst their bubble and say, that's not what you think it is. It's a different species of fish. Uh-huh. So there's a lot of different species out there, and there's a lot of different records, but there's a lot of information on it on the back page of the fishing regulations book. And then it also talks about the Master Angler Awards that we do, as well as First Fish Awards, which are pretty neat, you know, especially if you've got a young kid who's caught their first bluegill or walleye or whatever. Take a picture of it, send it into the DNR, and they send you back a neat little certificate that the kids can hang on the wall. So yeah. A lot of neat stuff out there, and just some different, you know, there's different things that you need to do in order to make sure that you've got, in fact, an actual record.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we got a big protracted weekend going, starting out on today and then right on through Tuesday, the 4th of July. New thing in Iowa, of course, is you see the white tents all over the place and selling fireworks, and they're legal. We've talked about safety and everything else, and it's doubly, there's a double need to really be careful with fireworks. Those things are dangerous.
They are, and I've about had my fill of them here in town. They've started about a week ago, and I got woke up by 2 o'clock in the morning the other day because of them. There's obviously some... You know, you just got to use a lot of common sense when it comes to fireworks. We don't allow them on state areas. We do allow some of the, I think they call them novelty-type fireworks, sparklers or snap pops and snakes, things like that, mm-hmm. In camping areas. But we don't allow people to go out to wildlife management areas and just shoot off fireworks because, one, they never pick them up because they never know where they end up if they're bottle rockets, say. And two, disturbs the wildlife. And also makes litter, along with there's a huge potential for fire to break out. Mm-hmm. So, it's great that we can shoot fireworks in Iowa now, but we need to find private property to do it if we want to have a big show.
Yeah, I've been questioning ever since this came out. Is okay, you get the fireworks sold. How you gonna patrol it? How are you going to enforce it? That's almost impossible to do.
I think it is.
We don't want to say impossible. But
it's difficult at best.
Pretty close. Okay. On the water, we have, of course, your usual safety type thing, and this is dry water, Operation Dry Water, right?
It is. That started this weekend. It's typically the weekend before the 4th of July. It's kind of a nationwide program that started years ago where basically conservation officers, water patrol type officers get out there on the public waters, and we enforce and are actively looking for drunk boaters. That doesn't mean that we don't look for them any other weekend of the year, but this is one where we pay special attention to it. We should go out there, and we oftentimes stop every boat that we encounter, not only looking for, obviously, drunken boating is one of the top priorities, but also looking for safety violations as well. Because oftentimes when we see safety violations, it in turn comes up with someone who's intoxicated while they're boating. So, just like a vehicle, the 0.08 limit is good on the water. You can't go out there and you know, one of the things that people sometimes fail to realize is that the water sometimes has different effects on us. You may feel intoxicated faster. You may lose, you know, some of your functions a little bit easier because you're out there rocking and swaying in a boat. So you add alcohol to that, hot sun, hot days, kids screaming or whatever, it can quickly take its toll on the operator. So, yeah, we would just, you know, want to encourage folks to make sure we've got a designated driver while we're on the water, just like we do when we're on the roads. And we encourage everybody to get out there and enjoy our public waters, but... We don't have much tolerance for people who are intoxicated while they're doing it.
You bet. We're out of time. I'll just to wish you to work safe, particularly through the 4th. But whenever you're out there, nighttime, daytime, take good care of number uno.
That's right. I appreciate that.
You bet. For Lyman Ag Center in Lyman, Iowa, and the Family Vision Center in greater downtown Atlantic, this has been Bob Evensee along with Grant Jelly, the conservation officer for Cache and Adair Counties on this morning's Conservation Report.